Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. As the budget showdown continues in Washington, D.C., tomorrow is the last day for Republicans and Democrats to agree to a spending bill in order to prevent a government shutdown. And tomorrow is the first day you'll be able to compare health insurance plans for the first time under the Affordable Care Act. California has opted in to create its own exchange, and the nation is watching what happens here. You can find more information about this on the website coveredca.com. That's coveredca.com, not Covered California, but Covered CA, and we'll be talking about that throughout the show. A lot of surveys show that many Americans are confused about the law and how they will be affected. So on today's Your Call, we're spending the hour taking your questions about how this law will affect you. Today, we're joined by Betsy Imholz. She's Special Projects Director at the nonprofit Consumers Union, and she joins me here in studio. Hi, Betsy. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Rose. Thanks for having me.
And Trudy Lieberman is a contributing editor for the Columbia Journalism Review, where she critiques press coverage about health care. Hi, Trudy. Welcome back to the show.
Hi. Thank you, Rose.
Great to have you both. So since we're taking questions, I want to give out the phone number early. And if you have any questions about how this law will affect you and what you're actually required to do, what it will cover, have you received information from your current plan, if you're covered by your employer, what questions do you have, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So, Trudy, why don't we start off with you since you're in the East Coast? How will this budget showdown affect Obamacare tomorrow?
Well, I don't think that it's going to affect it anytime soon. I think the exchanges are going to be open for business tomorrow. I don't know how ready a lot of them will be. There's been a lot of talk about some states, people are just going to be able to sign up. The backroom apparatus isn't quite ready to go. But I think that the administration is moving ahead and that people will be able to sign up beginning tomorrow. And I think it's important to realize that tomorrow is not necessarily a drop-dead day because people have 6 months from now to sign up. So this is not the only chance they're going to get. And even the administration is predicting kind of a soft landing here. So I think the important takeaway is that tomorrow is the first day, but for this first go-around, people have until March 31st in order to sign up for a plan. And that certainly will give them a lot of time to think about what they want to buy. Even if they sign up tomorrow or the 1st of November or the 1st of December, they're not going to have the coverage until January 1st. So that means for the next 3 months, they're still under whatever old insurance arrangements they have.
And what would you add to that, Betsy?
No, I think that's absolutely right. I think the next several months will be a great time for people to go on the website here in California, coveredca.com, which you mentioned earlier, and start browsing around and thinking about what you want, what's important to you and your coverage. Are there providers that you really want to stay with or particular drugs that you really need? And check out the plans in your region and see if they can meet those requirements for you.
So I'm checking out this website. And again, it's important to really emphasize the fact that this is coveredca.com, not coveredcalifornia.com, right?
That's correct. There's a copycat site that's been operating called coveredcalifornia.com, and that's not the official government site. Somebody got that name early on. So it's CoveredCA, and it's a .com, even though it is a government agency. So that makes it a little bit confusing, but important to get to the real official site.
And so this is the first time that you'll actually be able to compare health insurance plans?
Yeah. I mean, if you've had coverage through your employer or through the government, you may have been doing comparisons previously. But as of now, if you're buying on your own, it's the first time you'll really be able to go in and do side-by-side comparisons. California is among the few states who've chosen to really standardize the presentation and the policies. So the differences will be around cost, but they'll be laid out in a way that should be easy to compare apples to apples.
And Trudy, how does this compare to what we see now? Because when I bought my health insurance, I went onto some website that basically it was like an airline site. It gave you a bunch of different prices and told you what you might get and what you might not get. So how does this compare to what I guess we can now call the old way of finding insurance?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I know one of the commenters to my post last week asked the same question. She had been in the individual market before. I think I want to step back a little bit. We're talking about only people who are going to be buying in this so-called individual insurance market. People who have health insurance from their employer or Medicare or Medicaid or Medi-Cal in California, they are really not going to be affected by this shopping service arrangement that goes into effect tomorrow. And I think it's important to remember one thing in trying to talk about what they had before and what they have now, is that this market has always been very difficult to shop in. I used to call it the perilous individual market. And I meant by that it was expensive, and people who had any kind of pre-existing health condition or most pre-existing health conditions were not able to get coverage. And even if you had one and an insurance company decided to take you, it would commonly waiver out or rider out, those are the insurance terms, whatever you had. So you might get cover, you might have asthma, but you might not get any coverage for diseases of the respiratory system, for example. And so this is going to change for people beginning January 1st. So even people who are really sick will be able to get a policy. And that is one of the central features of the Affordable Care Act, that it does away with these insurance restrictions on pre-existing conditions. And so that is going to be one difference. People will have easier accessibility. As for comparing prices, as for shopping, I'm not sure that it's going to be, in some cases, all that much easier. Insurance products, by their very nature, are very difficult products to buy. They're not very much fun to buy. It's really much more fun to buy a car or go to a restaurant or something like that. And they're tough. And it requires a lot of thinking and decision-making on the part of consumers. And I'm happy that California is standardizing as much of this as possible, because that will really go a long way. But we're asking people to make all kinds of decisions and to be able to predict, and not just in the exchanges, but you do it even anytime you buy health insurance, no matter where. What kind of diseases, what kind of illnesses might befall them in the next year that they have the coverage? And unless you have a chronic condition, say diabetes or heart failure, congestive heart failure, where you sort of know your expenses for these conditions are predictable, they're not going to be predictable for a lot of families. And I often say that this comes from years of interviewing families who've had to make these decisions, that they've had, they have, say, a kid who plays football and he breaks a leg or gets a concussion playing a game, or somebody has a heart attack or an unexpected eye ailment. And so what this means is that you're going to have these unforeseen expenses, and most people really can't predict those, and they're not able to measure risk. And what we're being asking people to do, and the fact that there are going to be so many options available for people in many, many states, including California, means that they're going to have to learn to make some trade-offs. And we can talk about those as the program goes on. And that's kind of hard for people to do. So any standardization, any tool that will help that is all to the good.
And that is Trudy Lieberman, contributing editor with the Columbia Journalism Review, where she critiques press coverage of health care. Betsy Imholz is special projects director at the nonprofit Consumers Union. And today we are talking about what happens tomorrow, the first day of Obamacare. You'll be able to compare health insurance plans, and you've got to buy health insurance, which will go into effect by January 1st, and we'll talk about the penalties and all of that information. I'm sure we actually have full lines. So let's go to callers, because there's a lot of confusion out there and a lot of questions. So let's hear from Ian in San Francisco. Hi, Ian. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking the call. I've got a question. In San Francisco, there is a thing called Healthy San Francisco.
Right.
If you're signed up for that, does that count as you being covered under health insurance, or do you have to get separate?
My, Ian, this is Betsy from Consumers Union. My understanding is, yes, that does qualify. But you might want to also explore the offerings at Covered California. I think Healthy San Francisco may be eventually sort of wound down or sort of melded into the new process. So you're fine for now, but do take a look at the offering.
But what does that mean? Because a lot of people rely on Healthy SF for basic health care. What do you mean when it might be wound down?
Well, to be frank, I'm not positive about this. This has just come up recently. And, of course, it's very important for those people who are covered by it. It's a wonderful, groundbreaking, landmark program.
Oh, yeah. I have friends on it who say it's incredible.
It's been terrific. Really, really wonderful. And so I don't mean to say it's going under or it's going away tomorrow. But my understanding is that over time, the expectation is that with the subsidies that are available, very substantial subsidies, and the enlargement of Medi-Cal eligibility, which we can talk about later, in California, that it may not be seen as necessary. So just stay tuned on that. I don't want to send alarms to anyone about this wonderful program that they've already got.
Yeah.
May I make a larger point here?
Sure, Trudy.
I think the caller raises a very good point. He has existing coverage. And I think for people who are currently in the individual market or who may have another plan from a city, government, whatever, not an employer plan, or even if you have an employer plan, there's a document that you're really going to have to ask for. And people in that situation where they're going to think about, well, should I look in the exchange or should I keep what I have? I think it's going to be imperative for people in that situation to get a hold of a disclosure document. This disclosure document was authorized under the Affordable Care Act, and a lot of consumer advocates worked rather hard on it to figure out what sort of disclosures should be made to people. And as disclosure forms go, it's not a bad one. It's pretty good. However, there is no obligation on the part of the insurance company to give you this document. So you might be at the exchange and you're looking at, say, three plans that really interest you or that fit in your budget or, you know, at the price level you want or whatever, and you've got your own plan. So it's going to be really important for you as the consumer to get a hold of that document. If you ask for it from the insurance company, they have to give it to you. So basically the law said, well, we're really not going to make it too easy for people to get, but if they ask for it, they can get it.
So
you need to ask for that.
What is the best way to go about doing that? What is the document called exactly?
I think, Betsy, maybe you know the exact name of it, but I think it's basically the disclosure form that is required, well, that anybody can get if they ask for it.
Yeah.
Nobody's required to give it to you. And the interesting thing, basically the only drawback of this disclosure document is that there's no requirement that the price is given. So you may get these three documents, and it'll give you a lot of good information, but there'll be no prices on it. So you're going to have to go to the plan and look at the prices and compare it with what you have now.
Yeah, it's called, it does have an actual name. It's called the Summary of Benefits and Coverage. Okay. And it lays out all your, you know, the deductibles, the copays, and all that stuff. But it also has an interesting thing, which is some examples of episodes of care, so one of which is maternity, so that anyone who's had a baby knows there's all kinds of prenatal visits, the delivery, the anesthesiologist. Mm. And it gives you, on average, kind of a group together sense of what that might cost. So it's a good document. Do ask for it. Trudy's right. They're not always easy to come by, but they should be available.
All right.
By
well,
law.
Thank you, Ian. And I just found an article on the Examiner's website that a San Francisco panel is going to meet for the very first time to talk about blending Healthy SF with the Affordable Care Act. So you might want to check that out. And anybody on Healthy SF should definitely check that out. Thank you for calling. Let's go next to Peter in Watsonville. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for taking my phone call. My wife and I gave up our health insurance about 12 years ago when the premiums hit 500 and the deductibles hit 5,000. We're fortunate enough to be healthy, touch wood, and we have no real intention of taking out insurance under the new act. It just seems to me as if it's just another way of shoveling funds around for the insurance companies, so I'd quite like to know what the fines might be on a regular basis, and we'll probably end up paying those and not taking advantage of the system. And also I'd like to say that if this is that unpopular an act, back in England in the 80s, you may not have heard of a thing called poll tax, which Maggie Thatcher put in based on occupancy of a house, regardless of how wealthy the people were, they had to pay a tax. And the public demonstrations were so huge that after 2 years of extreme demonstrations, including violence, they actually repealed the law.
Well, thank you, Peter. Stay on the line in case you have a follow-up question.
Sure.
Betsy, what will he be fined?
Yeah, the fines for the first year are relatively low, $95 or 1% of your income, whichever is greater. But, you know, going bare, as they call it, not having any insurance is, you know, it's a personal choice, but it is a high risk. Health care costs are the number one cause of personal bankruptcies in the United States. And so obviously it's a choice everyone needs to make for themselves. But we urge people to have some coverage. I just would say also that, for, as I mentioned earlier, California's expanded Medicaid. You know, many states have chosen, 26 of them, I think, have chosen not to do so, sort of almost a political protest. But California, thank goodness, has done that. And so for those who applied for Medicaid in the past, known as Medi-Cal here, and were found ineligible because they didn't meet one of those really narrow criteria, like you had to have a dependent child living at home and be a single parent, blah, 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 all of that's going to change, very dramatic change come January. So for people of, you know, very low income, don't give up on Medi-Cal. It can be free care, and there's no asset test any longer, and none of those categories apply.
So, I want to add one thing, that the penalties are pretty low the first couple of years, but they do increase as the years go on. So I guess if you choose that you don't want insurance, you really do have to pay way off the trade-off of the penalty that you will have to pay versus whatever the cost of a premium would be.
And are you hearing from a lot of people, Trudy, who are not going to take part in this program?
No, I haven't really been out on the street, as they say, asking people. I've just been too busy kind of trying to write the how-to stories that reporters need to have under their belt to cover this thing. So I can't really speak to that issue.
And how will this affect low-income people in terms of the fine? And low-income people not being able to afford.
Yeah, there are exemptions. There are exemptions from the requirement to have coverage, and one of them is if you have an extremely low income and you're not eligible for Medicaid in a state, for example, that didn't expand Medicaid. So there are some very narrow exemptions for hardship from the penalties.
And then there's subsubsidies also, right?
And then there are very big federal subsidies for those who are slightly above the Medicaid level, but for example, up to approximately $45,000 for a single individual, or up to $94,000 slightly, or around that, slightly more even, for a family of four. So the income levels are fairly high and the subsidies are quite substantial. And those subsidies go in the form of advanceable tax credits to reduce the premium costs every month, sometimes hundreds and hundreds of dollars off the premiums. And then for others in a relatively narrower band, you can also get help with the out-of-pocket costs.
What about people who don't have access to these websites?
There is a toll-free number here in California, which is 800-300-1506. And the benefit of going online, particularly for those who speak another language as their primary language, is that they'll have ready access to translation services. But the phone number is there, too. There's lots of people, you know, waiting to take calls as well.
Can I add one more thing about the range of the subsidies? Because I think this is not really totally understood by a lot of people. The subsidies will be most generous for people at the lower ends of the income spectrum. So a family coming onto the exchange with, say, an income of $20,000 to $30,000 will get a fairly large subsidy that might really cover a good share of any kind of policy they want to buy. And people at the very high end, the people with the $90,000 incomes, are not going to get a very large subsidy. It's the people in the middle that many people are worried about. The median income in this country is around $51,000 to $52,000. And people in those ranges, 50 to 60,000, 65,000, these are middle-income people. These are not wealthy people, and these are not high incomes. And there's real concern that the subsidies may not be large enough for those people in those bands to get a policy that covers them that gives them good coverage, because not all of these policies will give you really good coverage. And so the worry is that some people in those areas might get, say, a subsidy of maybe $6,000 or $7,000, and they want a policy of $12,000 or $13,000. And I should add that this year the average premium for family coverage under an employer plan was over $16,000. So just using that as a benchmark, you can figure that a good individual market plan is going to be somewhere in that neighborhood, maybe somewhat lower, I don't know. But still, if someone has a subsidy that's, say, only $7,000 or $8,000, and then they have to pay another $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 out of pocket with all their other expenses, that may be tough for them. And so there is some concern that people in that income range may decide it's cheaper to take the penalty than buy insurance. Mm.
Well, and we have a calculator from the Kaiser Foundation on our website, yourcallradio.org. And then also, again, the website is coveredca.com, not California, but coveredca.com. Today we are joined by Trudy Lieberman, contributing editor with the Columbia Journalism Review, and Betsy Imholz, special projects director at the Consumers Union. And we're talking about Obamacare. It goes into effect tomorrow, and 5.2 million Californians will qualify, the most in the country. All eyes are actually on California because California has opted to create its own exchange. And we have full lines. We'll have one open in a few minutes. You can give us a call, 866-798-8255, or if it's easier, you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's go next to Drew in San Francisco. Hi, Drew. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm going to go ahead and switch you to my this so I sound a little bit better.
Yes, thank you.
I'm calling to find out about out-of-pocket subsidies. The reason I ask is particularly people in the $20,000, $30,000 income area, they may qualify for quite large subsidies. Let's just say, for example, they qualify for a subsidy that qualifies them to pay $100 a month for their insurance. But most of those policies have, for example, $1,500 at the lowest, but more likely $3,000 to $4,500 deductibles. And say, for example, that person has a condition that requires, you know, quarterly or biannual blood work. Well, most of the insurance companies have moved that kind of service over to outpatient, deductible, not copay eligible, meaning that that person has to pay out of pocket for that expense until their deductible is met. So even though they're only paying $70, $100 per month in premiums, which is, you know, only $1,200 a year for their insurance, because they can't afford the deductible, they're effectively uninsured. Because they can't afford, you know, you're in the city of San Francisco making $22,000 a year. A $500 blood work is a significant hit to your income. And so I'm just wondering, you know, what the system's going to do to accommodate that. Number one, are they going to change it so these basic, very basic services like blood work, instead of being subject to deductible, are subject to copay as they once were, you know, even as early as 3 or 4 years ago? Or are they going to provide significant enough subsidies for these sorts of services that, you know, these sorts of people are effectively insured?
All right.
Can I answer that question?
Yeah, Trudy, actually, we're going to have to go to break. Hold that thought. Okay. And Betsy's been taking notes, so she'll also answer your question. Thanks for calling in. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back to your calls. We have full lines, and I've got a ton of emails. And so we'll try to get to as many as possible. We're talking today about Obamacare, which goes into effect tomorrow. You will be able to look at various plans, and then it goes into effect January 1st, 2014. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW. If you'd like to join in today's conversation, perhaps you have a perspective that has not yet been expressed in the discussion, or maybe you have a question that you'd like to have answered, please get in touch. Here's the number, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email your question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with Laura Gottesdiener about her new book, A Dream Foreclosed, Black America and the Fight for a Place to Call Home. She found that more than 10 million people, 10 million across the country have been evicted from their homes in the last 6 years, and private equity firms are buying them up. So how did this happen, and how are these families fighting back? That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the Affordable Care Act, which goes into effect tomorrow. For the very first time, you will be able to compare health plans, and then the insurance coverage begins January 1st, 2014. And if you don't buy a plan, you will be fined $95 or 1% of your income. So today we are taking your questions. There's a lot of confusion out there. If you live in California, be sure to check out the website coveredca.com. It's not California. Be sure not to go to that site. It's coveredca.com. California has opted in to create its own exchange. And so many other states are watching what happens here because of this. We've got a state with 7 million people who don't have health insurance. You can give us a call. We actually have an open line now at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Betsy Imholz, Special Projects Director at the Nonprofit Consumers Union, and Trudy Lieberman covers these issues, where she's contributing editor with the Columbia Journalism Review. And Trudy, you wanted to first answer Drew's question, and it was a pretty long question. Can you just summarize it for us?
The question was an excellent one, and I think it gets really to the the heart of the matter here. He was concerned that a low premium is going to come with a lot of cost sharing, which means that you're going to have to pay high deductibles, high co-in payments, or high co-insurance. The last two are not the same thing, and people get them confused all the time. A co-payment is a set amount you pay for a particular service, like $20 or $50. A co-insurance amount, which is what is happening now, is a percentage of the bill you have to pay. And the point he was making is that there's been a shift by the insurance companies to load up these outpatient services, which he said that they don't count toward the deductible. In many policies, that's true. But the ones I've seen are coming with very large amounts of co-insurance, which means that they may say that if you go to an urgent care center or you have some procedure in an outpatient hospital clinic, or a freestanding outpatient facility, which I know there are many in California, you may pay 30, 50, or maybe more percentage of that bill. And that may be in addition to a high deductible, or it may not be. And that is the trade-off you get, you take, for getting the lower premium. In insurance, you get what you pay for. So the more you pay, the better off your benefits are going to be. And insurance companies take those elements of the policy, the deductible, the co-payment, and the co-insurance, and they mix and match them in the computer, and they come up with a premium they think that will make people buy their policy. So it's not so simple as just getting a cheap premium, and lots of spin has been going on around about this. You have to look at these other elements and decide what you want. And a lot of the journalists who've been writing about this have confused co-insurance with co-payments. Co-payments are becoming a thing of the past. The $5, $10, $20 that we're all used to paying. They're not doing that so much anymore. What they're doing is shifting to co-insurance. Now, I might add that people who are at the low end, below 250% of the federal poverty level, will get additional subsidies to help them pay the cost-sharing requirements. So people at the lower end of that income spectrum will do pretty well because they're going to get help with that co-insurance of 50%. People above 250% of poverty are going to get stuck with it, and it's really important people look at that.
We've got a related question from Mark in San Rafael who says, there's a rumor that the quality of coverage that will be available under the act will be below average compared to most employer-covered care, such as Blue Cross. Is this true, Betsy?
No, I think there's really no basis for that. The plans, if you go on the website, you'll see the plans that are offered through Covered California are brand name plans that everybody knows. As well, you know, there's some for-profits, some non-profits, Kaiser, Blue Shield, et cetera. And then there's some more localized plans, like in San Francisco, the Chinese Community Health Plan. But the providers are providers that we all know. Now, will they have every provider? The expectation is that the networks may be somewhat narrower. But that remains to be seen. There'll be the standard, though, big hospitals and many of the same providers. So there's no reason to think the coverage will be of a lower quality. What we're advocating for here in California is that we get those quality ratings as well up on the website. And they may not have it in October, but I think by January we will have some quality information up there as well. So I think that's really... there's no reason to be worried about the particular quality here. And they'll all have the same, remember, all have the same essential health benefits, which is a comprehensive package of benefits.
And then since we brought up subsidies, we have another question from a listener who says, is it an income tax credit which comes along after I've paid for the insurance I can't afford? Or is it a mechanism that helps me pay for the insurance in the first place? Does the government send partial payment? How does this
work? Really, really, really important question. They're called advanceable premium tax credits, which means the government will send the subsidy directly to the plan so that you don't have to pay it and then get it back in the end. You can take all of it in advance, which lowers your monthly premium up front, or you can take it partially and wait till tax time. It's really up to you, and that's another one of those little bit of confusing calculations that people have to do depending on what their expectation is of their income situation throughout the year and their ability to pay month to month.
Rose, can I go back to the previous questioner's comment on the quality? The quality issue is very complicated, and there's no reason to believe that the quality of care you get is going to be any different. There is an issue with the networks, and it is fairly significant in California, at least that's what the LA Times has told us, that, and then this may be one of the reasons why the caller was asking the question. Many of the health plans in California offering in this exchange have very narrow networks, and that means that some providers and some hospitals, some doctors, some other kinds of providers may not be in those networks. And the reason for that is that the insurance companies are trying to get deep discounts from providers, and then they want to pass those cost savings on to the consumer in the form of a lower premium, which will make them choose their plan. And I believe the LA Times reported that some of the carriers in California are not offering the same networks in the employer market as they are in the exchange. And I think that if these networks are indeed that different, that means that the consumer is going to have to look very carefully and check to make sure that providers that they want to go to are in their networks.
The one tweak I'd say to that is that the quality is a really complicated topic in healthcare. Sort of, do you judge it by outcomes? Do you judge it by the number of tests you're allowed to have, et cetera, et cetera? So I would say, agree with Trudy, look it over, see if your provider's in there, but also then try and look at the provider quality information that is available because, you know, some of the big names are not necessarily those that get the highest safety and quality ratings. So again, it is a complicated topic, but worth exploring a little.
Well, Denise in San Francisco writes, who among us is capable of wading through all of this healthcare bureaucracy to enjoy what should be a right, not a privilege? We need Medicare for all.
Yeah, that's what consumers unions fought for decades. But we are where we are, and we do think the world will be better in terms of getting people coverage. However, she's absolutely right. It is, we have found in our research, a consumer's most dreaded task is shopping for health insurance.
Well, especially if you're sick or if you need a breast cancer screening
Absolutely.
You know, and I remember talking about this last year, and someone from Consumers Union called in because I was talking about my mom's experience with pre-existing conditions, and the doctor said, you have a lump. Go get tested. Well, how do you do that if you don't have insurance or if they're going to charge you $2,000 a month?
Absolutely. And we've tried to make it simpler through Covered California, through our advocacy to not give infinite choice, because infinite numbers of plans are only confusing. All the research shows that people get cognitive overload, all these variables, coinsurance, copayments.
So,
give a reasonable amount of choice so people feel like there is something differentiating.
Right. What advice would you give? How can you make this sort of easy or not so difficult? Yeah. I mean, at least this coveredca.com site is pretty nice and clean. Mm-hmm. There's a button that just says shop and compare. Use this calculator to find out your potential insurance costs in 2014.
Yeah. Well, California's been divided into regions. So find out the region that you're in. And within the Bay Area regions that I just scanned before coming on here today, there's about 5 plan companies for each of the regions. And then there will be the metal tiers that we talked about earlier, you know, sort of like the Olympic metal tiers, the bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. So there will be choices. But before you sit down, you know, figure out your region, and then also write down, what are the providers that I really care about? If there are some that you've had for a long time treating a chronic condition, what are the drugs that I really got to make sure I have, that they're on the formulary for the health plan? Those are two things that will allow you to narrow it down, because there's an algorithm built into the Covered California website that will allow you to put in some of those preferences and to look at the directory of providers and see if those preferences are within the particular plans, and then to order the presentation to you based on those.
Rose, can I just add that last week I prepared for reporters and for the public a step-by-step guide to the decisions that you have to make every step of the way to choose a policy. And I put a lot of thought into it, and putting myself into the shoes of someone who would have to buy in the exchange. So I'd recommend that people go to the Columbia Journalism Review website, that's cjr.org, and look at the Untangling Obamacare, Shopping in the Exchanges piece. And I think it's not very long, and I think that will sort of set some parameters. And then you can look at all of these other things that Betsy mentioned as well.
All right. And your article is already on our website, Trudy. So thank you for talking about that. That's Trudy Lieberman, contributing editor with the Columbia Journalism Review, and Betsy Imholz is special projects director at the Consumers Union. And today we are talking about Obamacare. Actually, Walt just wrote in and said, why do you call it Obamacare, which has been used so derisively by its opponents? Well, President Obama has embraced Obamacare, probably because it's been used by its opponents. So he even uses it. So we've got just about 10 or so minutes left, and let's try to get to as many callers and emails as we can. Let's go next to Christopher in Brooklyn. Hi, Christopher. Oh, did we lose you? Christopher, are you there? Sorry about that. Let's go to Shannon in Albany, New York. Or Albany, New York? Hi.
Albany, California.
Oh, hi. Sorry. Christopher
was
in New York.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. It might be covered in the subsidies question, but I'm still a bit unclear on whether or not insurance companies will still have the ability to price out potential patients based on pre-existing conditions. I have had personal experience with this problem where a premium that should have been somewhere around $180 a month has been offered at over $1,000 a month due to a quote-unquote pre-existing condition. Will that be something where it can be priced that high, but then governmental subsidies will be put in place?
Mm-mm. No more. No. Pre-existing conditions no more will dictate the premium.
However, they cannot use health condition as a factor in deciding which insurance, how much they charge you. They will be able to charge by the kind of where you live. So somebody in a high-cost area, I'm gathering Los Angeles is one of them, is probably going to see higher premiums in general than somebody in Trinidad, for example, up in the north. Another thing that they can do, they can charge higher premiums to people who smoke because they present a much greater health risk to the insurance company. And they can charge an older person 3 times more than they can charge a younger person. So that a 56-year-old shopping in the exchange for the same policy might pay 3 times more than a 36-year-old person buying the same kind of policy.
Actually, in California, there's only three factors. Smoking, we've outlawed rating on the basis of tobacco use.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so happily, we don't have that one. It's just age, family size, and region. And actually, Los Angeles is among the cheapest regions. But the Bay Area is a high one, however, and that's where Albany is. So.
And just a quick question, although this is really important. What about premiums? Because Think Progress has a piece called Health Insurers Threaten to Increase Premiums Even as Their Profits Go Through the Roof. The largest health insurance companies like Aetna, United Health, and Blue Cross say that they might raise premiums by as much as 116% next year at a time when United Health posted $5.1 billion in profits last year.
That's really interesting because United and Aetna are not part of our exchange in California. Blue Cross Anthem is. And our exchange in California is what we call an active purchaser. The law requires them to actively negotiate and to take bids from different plans and then choose the ones they want. And we have 12 companies altogether in California in the exchange. But Aetna and United are not among them.
I think a lot of the rate, what's going to happen in the years following are going to depend on who gets into the exchanges this time and whether there's going to be a good mix of young, healthy people with the older, sicker people who are going to inevitably go into the exchanges. And I think that's a big unknown. But I do want to bring up one point about rate regulation. And California has a lot, at least the exchange has a lot more power to sort of keep track of these rates and be more concerned about them than other states do. However, I believe there was some rate regulation issue in California that is still unresolved in terms of how much an insurance commissioner in the state can actually lower the rates or put pressure on a company to lower the rates. And I think that this is also going to be an unknown as we go into it in the next year or two, because regulation is pretty weak across the United States. Some states are better than others. And I think it's going to really depend on not only what kind of regulatory structure you have in your state, but how those exchanges are going to play out in the next 6 months.
Well, and the healthcare industry knows this, right? I mean, according to the Center for Responsive Politics, they spent $243 million last year on lobbying, higher than any other sector. And this is a windfall for the health insurance corporations because they're going to make $200 billion in revenue by 2019 because we all are now required to buy their product.
This is true. And the insurance industry is powerful. Under this program, we are still reliant on the private insurance industry. This is a fact.
This is a lot of money for companies that posted $5 billion in profits. They always go through the roof. $200 billion in revenue by 2019.
This is, as Betsy said, it's the decision that political people made to have this kind of system. And these are private insurance companies. We've made the decision to expand coverage to millions more people, but using the system we have. And that means that the insurance will remain pretty much in private hands, and the delivery of care will be in private hands. And it's important to remember that it's the providers, it's the doctors and hospitals that are really the drivers of what premium you pay. The insurance companies, of course, take a cut, and they have administrative expenses, and you can argue whether we need a system that has all those administrative expenses, because other systems in other parts of the world do not. But that is the system we have, and so I think people really do have to be prepared for living with the consequences of the system that our political leaders have chosen.
Trudy Lieberman is contributing editor with the Columbia Journalism Review, and Betsy Imholz is special projects director at Consumers Union. And let's hear from Lori in Santa Cruz. Hi, Lori. I'm sorry, let's go to Ruth Ann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruth Ann. Hello, Ruth Ann. Let's go to our next caller. Hi, who's on the line?
Lori in Santa Cruz, hello.
Hi. Oh, hi, Lori.
Hi. For some reason, you couldn't hear me. I'm one of the people that would be buying in the exchange as a self-employed person. My question is, I usually don't know exactly what my income is until I work out all my tax stuff at the end of the year because I'm a musician, and profit and loss and expenses. So what happens if I overpay on my subsidized premium? Does that money just stay with the health insurance company, or do I get that money back? Because it's hard to estimate my income accurately from year to year.
That's a really, really important question. I'm so glad you raised it, because a lot of people are in your situation. You don't know exactly from year to year what the income's going to be. My best advice is to estimate, look at last year's, try to estimate this year's, and then there will be sort of a reconciliation moment at tax time. If you get an advanced premium tax credit, whether you take too much or take not enough, it'll be balanced out at tax time. So it's a tricky situation, but it is a huge benefit. So I wouldn't say don't take it because of the uncertainty, but try to do your best estimate and then know that it will all be reconciled out in April.
What happens is at the end, if you've overpaid, then you will get money back. If you've underpaid, then you're going to get an advice from Uncle Sam saying that you owe more money. And this is a change that was made, was not in the original law, but it was made fairly soon after the law passed, because Congress decided to relieve some of the business community of some tax reporting requirements that would have raised about $22 million, and they had to get a way to make up that money, so they came up with this process.
All right. Thank you for calling. A listener wrote in asking me to spell the website for Covered CA. It's COVERED. As in dog, it's not coverage, it's covered, ca.com. COVERED, as in dog, ca.com. Be sure you don't go to Covered California, spelled out, ca.com.
And the reason we're urging you not to go to the other one is that there was a copycat site. That name was, URL was bought up by a private interest. I believe some agents and brokers, perhaps, who've got that, and it's very confusing for folks. So we're just
to add another level of confusion to this entire process.
Yes. When any new government program gets set up, there's always people out there who are kind of taking advantage.
And I also, because I know a lot of our listeners are not online, the 800 number is 800-300-1506, 800-300-1506. And we've got just a few more minutes left, so let's go through a few callers. Let's go to Carrie in San Francisco. Hi, Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Wait. Oh, you have the wrong name. That's why I was confused.
Sorry, Brad.
Yeah, no problem. I have two very quick questions. One, is there any potential in the foreseeable future of having dental coverage included in any kind of Affordable Care Act or whatever you want to call it, any kind of a medical plan that brings, lowers the cost? $5,000 per tooth is pretty expensive to have anyone try to fix their teeth, which always have to be done. And the second question real quickly is, are there any real serious or advanced groups that are dedicated towards instituting a policy or a national medical program where access to medical care is, becomes a right of the citizen?
Physicians for a National Health Program. Yes, they're the doctors that got arrested when this debate was going down in Washington because they didn't have a seat at the table.
You bet. And as to the first question about dental, boy, many of us do feel like dental care is essential. Dental health is essential to good overall medical health.
Sorry to cut you off, but because we're almost out of time, Remote Area Medical is that clinic, traveling clinic, that provides free dental and eye care to people, and they line up at 8 o'clock at night to get care the next morning. One of the dentists I interviewed there said that a bunch of dentists brought a plan to the White House and said, this is how we can cover everyone. And the White House told them dental is not on the table. Is that true?
Well, I don't know about that part. But what in California, I just want to, because we're almost out of time, I want to make sure I say that to watch at Covered California on this topic, because they are considering both dental and vision plans to be offered as separate supplemental things. So do look for that. I wish it were part of the essential health benefits, but it's not here.
Not at all.
I think there is dental coverage for kids, and those premiums are separate. And often when we talk about the whole premium structure, we tend to forget that those may be added to a family policy.
That's right. It is part of the essential coverage for children only. Yeah.
All right, we have time for one more quick caller, Carrie in San Francisco. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. I wanted to bring up the issue of Medicare for All. I keep hearing it on the radio all the time. What happened to me was I paid my premiums. I worked enough to qualify for my Social Security and Medicare. The first time I used it, after 14 months of paying over $100 in premiums, I got a bill for $1,400 because the treatment for dermatology was...
Carrie, you know what? We're almost out of time. If you can get to the gist of your question, please.
Well, the gist is that Medicare for All does not work, and if you have a copay, the copay, the 20%, just killed me. So I no longer have Medicare. I can't afford the premiums and the copay, too. So the poor can't afford... The Medicare for All does not work for all the poor. Mm. Unless they get rid of the copay, it was put in 89 by the Republicans and Obama when they had the Democratic control of Congress and the president.
All right. Thank you for calling. Sorry to cut you off, but we're almost out of time. Trudy, quick response.
The Medicare program has a lot of cost sharing in it. In some ways, it's not going to be much different than what people are going to find under the Affordable Care Act. The Medicare program has a 20% co-insurance. It's not a copay, as the caller suggested. It means that you have to pay 20% of any Part B service, which means that's the doctor bills, the outpatient services, and so on. And most people take a supplemental policy to cover that, and in some cases they are not cheap.
Well, we're going to have to do another show. I'm really sorry we didn't get to all your phone calls and emails, but there's so many questions and confusion. Again, that website is covered, C-O-V-E-R-E-D, as in dog, C-A.com. Trudy Lieberman is a contributing editor with the Columbia Journalism Review, and Betsy Imholz is with Consumers Union. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your... How are families dealing with the foreclosure crisis, and how bad was it? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with Laura Gottesdiener, author of A Dream Foreclosed, Black America and the Fight for a Place to Call Home. She found that more than 10 million people across the country have been evicted from their homes in the last 6 years. So how did this happen, and how are these families fighting back? Join the conversation and call in with your questions on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.